This is Sarah Robinson, and you're listening to Conscious Creating. Today I'll be talking with Anna Dara, Director of Acquisitions for the Spiritual Cinema Circle. Since joining the company in 2004, she has signed 4 to 5 films each month, scouring film festivals for provocative, introspective work, which inspires insight. Anna Dara, welcome to Conscious Creating.
Thank you.
Tell me where you were born.
I was born in Norristown, Pennsylvania.
Ah, is it cold up there in the winter?
It is, yeah. It's about 45 minutes from Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
to the northwest, and my family was, my family came, both sides of my family actually came from right near that area. And so that was, I was born within a few miles of where my mother was born and where my father was born.
Hmm. So you grew up in a sense of warmth and community.
Very much so, yeah, with grandparents all around me.
That's amazing. You know, people don't experience that as much these days, and I regret that for my own children.
Mm. Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I have my mom and stepdad live about an hour from me, and for the first 8 years of my daughter's life, they lived about 40 feet from me.
Wow, you must be close.
We're very close, we are. And I have to say that I do appreciate the hour distance at this point, but I'm also really glad that we had the opportunity to live so closely.
It must have been great for your daughter as well.
Absolutely.
Would you consider yourself a creative child?
Yeah, very much so. I was very interested in the arts as a child. The arts were important in my family and were very respected from the time that I was little. Both of my parents had great talents that they sort of put in the category of hobby because they were raised at a time when basically they needed to get a corporate kind of a job and raise a family and have, you know, money coming in. I mean, this was the time when you had one job for 40 years and then you retired.
Oh, yeah.
And so my father was a brilliant artist and photographer, and my mother was a singer-songwriter.
Wow.
And they were very talented, and my brothers and I grew up surrounded by music and art and being encouraged in those fields. And actually, I can very clearly recall my mother saying many times that the arts, she really believed that the arts were the highest calling. And so we were deeply encouraged and also somewhat discouraged by the fact that my parents didn't choose that route for themselves, and we saw this great talent and it not being really fulfilled, you know, in their lives. And so each of us, my two older brothers and myself, are all in the arts still to this day, and decided that we were going to make our living in the field rather than, you know, staying in it as a hobby.
I'm interested in this comment your mother made. She considered the arts the highest calling. Did she ever communicate exactly what that meant to her?
Well, I think when I went to college, I went with the idea that I was going to probably major in art or writing, you know, in some way, shape, or form, in English literature or journalism or fine arts. And what I ended up doing was actually majoring in theater. And I had friends who were in the theater department with me who were at the point of being disowned by their families when they chose theater, because you know, it's a rough calling. I mean, your parents expect you to be a doctor and you decide to major in theater. And so when I called my mom to discuss the fact that I wanted to declare my major as theater, she, you know, expressed my fear that she would be disappointed in some way or nervous for me or whatever, and she felt that the arts were the highest calling and that she supported me completely in whatever direction I wanted to move into within the arts, and she would support me in theater. And that was an incredible buoyancy that I held throughout my whole time in college, and I felt very privileged and unique because I didn't see my friends and colleagues being supported in the same way. So I feel very fortunate to have had that kind of support. And I think she has always felt that the arts were a higher spiritual connection or a higher spiritual expression on the planet, and she feels that, you know, being a patron to the arts, watching the arts, listening, being a part of that, making sure that the arts are a part of your daily world is an incredibly important part of being human, and has always cultivated that in me and supported me in being a part of the arts because of that.
And this is an ancient notion that the arts are a higher calling, or the way it was, I think, described, certainly in classical Greece and Rome, was that we were priests, really. We had a mission much like, say, the shamans have. And I have always tried to embrace that, but you were very fortunate to have a mother who embraced it as well.
Very fortunate.
What is it that your brothers do?
They have both been in film as well, strangely enough, from different directions. My middle brother, Glenn, has been in film since he was a child, and he picked up a Super 8 camera and began making movies, and he actually ended up creating animation and live action shorts, you know, claymation sorts of things that I was always a part of peripherally. I always sort of moved the papers around between snapshots on the camera. You know, he would do one shot and then freeze it, and then another shot and then freeze it, and move the pieces of paper or the claymation character in between, that kind of thing. And I remember running around in Broomhilda costume as he filmed my best friend and I, you know, in a silly skit we were doing. And so sort of growing up with that, and he was just driven. It was like he was led to this, and he never shifted any focus. He always knew that this is what he wanted to do. And he actually ended up, he went to Bard College and studied film the whole time, and ended up joining MTV just after college, and was a senior producer of on-air promotions for MTV for 10 years.
Wow.
And did lots of music videos and commercial work and things like that on the side as well. So he experienced a great deal of success in that field, and has basically kind of now moved into a time where he gets to take care of himself and have time and space to live his life. So he has left the ridiculous grind of what it was to be in that job and now lives a much mellower life on an island.
Oh, my goodness. That is a different life from Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he was in New York. But, leaving New York and ending up on a Pacific island is pretty cool.
Hmm. So, have you had a chance to collaborate at all?
No, you know, we never have. We've each taken very different paths. My older brother, Dare, he worked in music for a long time, was the manager of a sound studio in Philadelphia for 8 years, and was in a band himself for a long time. He's a great musician, great keyboard player, and a singer-songwriter himself. And he ended up actually sort of out of need for a stronger career path at some point, realizing he wanted to raise a family and that sort of thing. He kind of shifted his line of work into film and began doing basically industrial video kind of work, where he works with companies to create videos for internal reasons, internal needs for major conferences and that sort of thing.
I was the industrial queen of Houston, Texas. I know all about it.
You know all about it.
Yeah. It's your bread and butter as an actor when you're in a tertiary market. So.
Exactly. Exactly. And I've gotten to work with him a little bit. You know, when I go back to Philadelphia, sometimes he throws me on a job with him, and I get to have great fun watching him direct and produce the whole thing. And it's really, it's really neat that we are all in and around the same field. So we understand each other, but we don't do exactly the same things.
And those industrial videos are becoming really innovative and much like short films.
Oh, yeah. And he was shooting on HD before, you know, my friends in the film industry were.
Wow.
And he's, you know, he learns the new programs, he learns the new editing systems and all of that before people who, you know, are doing this, you know, with major features learn it. It's funny, because there's a lot of money there, too.
And there's some great editors in that business. I know we're getting technical for the audience, but I'm fascinated with people who do what you do. This is Sarah Robinson with Conscious Creating, and I'm talking with film producer Anna Dara, director of acquisitions of the Spiritual Cinema Circle. So you ended up earning a BA in theater then from Guilford College in Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, what took a girl so far from home?
Well, funny enough, it was getting closer to home, because what had happened was I went to a brilliant, brilliant school in Philadelphia for 7th, 8th, and 9th grade in the early 80s called Germantown Friends School. I was born and raised a Quaker in Philadelphia. And I should actually make an aside and let people know, now that I'm out here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, people rarely have any idea what Quakerism is about out here. Generally, in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania, most people do have a better idea of what it is. But out here, people think I mean Amish or Mennonite, you know, and they're thinking living like you're in the 1800s and wearing bonnets and that sort of thing. But Quakerism is not like that at all. The way I talk about it is it's the closest thing to Buddhism and Christianity.
It's a contemplative practice.
It's very much contemplative. It's about sitting in silence and allowing the Word of God to come to you. So they believe you don't need a minister to hear the Word of God. You can hear it yourself if you just sit quietly and listen. And when more than two people are gathered in one place with the idea of being to listen, then God is present. The reason this all came up was because I was living in Philadelphia and going to Germantown Friends School, which was a terrific high school. And my mother actually met and married a man who lived in Atlanta, Georgia. So I moved to Atlanta when I was 15, and I went to an Episcopalian school there. It was quite the change for this little northern girl, and it was, it certainly challenged me in every possible way. And I think I was ready for a challenge, but it was pretty intense, I have to say. But so what happened was when it came time to look at colleges, I was actually looking north and found Guilford. And thought, hey, here's a school that would take me back to Quakerism again. The best experience I've ever had with school was, you know, a Quaker high school. So let's see what that's about. And I went to the campus and looked around and said, this is home, and stayed for 4 years. So it was great. It was a great experience.
And you majored in theater, but you had a particular emphasis. What was that?
Well, I sort of crafted my own route. I majored in theater, and I minored in art, and I had a concentration in communications, which basically meant that I learned a lot about speech and public speaking and journalism and the media of, you know, communication, basically. So I kind of crafted my own course of study through Guilford that really suited me very well.
And what was your interest in Shakespeare?
I love Shakespeare. I still love Shakespeare. Shakespeare, to me, is some of the most genius writing the planet has ever seen. And I am fully convinced that Shakespeare, that the works of Shakespeare were written by a woman. And actually, I have recently found the answer to an ancient query for me that began in college. I don't know what originally drew me to Shakespeare. I just always was so moved and so inspired when I would speak the words out loud. And I remember in high school when we would read the plays, I would go to the bathroom or, you know, go down to the locker room, and I'd be speaking in my head in this Elizabethan English.
Well, perhaps you're a reincarnation of Mary Sidney.
So do you know about Mary Sidney?
Well, yes, and I read your recent review of Robin Williams's book, Sweet Swan of Avon, which I enjoyed very much.
Yes. You've got to read this book. It's amazing.
I want to read it. So tell me.
Well, basically, in college, I played my senior thesis for my acting major was Isabella in Measure for Measure, which is just a classic role. And when you play the role and you're submerged in this for, you know, 3 or 4 months, and every single syllable is broken down and taken apart and the nuances are explored so deeply, I knew all through my being that a woman wrote this. There was just no question to me. It was like it's not an option that this was written by a man. It's not possible. And so recently in Santa Fe, actually about, 5 years ago, I guess, I was working with the screenwriting conference in Santa Fe, and there was a woman who would show up at the meetings, and she was working on their website, and kind of, she was their web guru, and her name was Robin Williams, and she was this wonderful woman, and one day she said to me, I have a group of people who come to my house once a month and read Shakespeare, and if you'd like to come along, and I think she thought that I would never show up, you know, because I was kind of younger, and she just couldn't believe that because I said I love, you know, Shakespeare is a great passion of mine, and I'm not sure she believed me, mm-hmm. and I have showed up every Sunday.
and it's like ambrosia to you.
It is like ambrosia, and I'll tell you, it's made better by a number of ways in which she crafts these monthly meetings. That basically you show up at her house with some food and everybody just gets very indulgent and we all sit around and eat the most amazing, wonderful things that everybody brought.
Oh, please invite me.
and we drink Kir Royals and we, you know, we have coffee and dessert after act three.
So it's like a salon, really.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to practice. You're not supposed to read your part beforehand. You show up with your book, you open the play, and you just read cold. So it's not a lot of work, but then what happens is it's like 4 hours where you're plowing through this stuff, and anytime somebody has something to say or a question or a like, wow, can you believe that line? Isn't that incredible? We keep talking about snow and rain, and what's up with the great chain of being here? And we get into these huge discussions in the middle of this anytime we need to, basically.
After you graduated from college, what was your first step in terms of your career?
Well, I moved straight to New York City with the intention to begin my acting career in a bigger way. I had actually had an agent in North Carolina for my last year of college and was doing commercial work and still work and that sort of thing. So I felt like I had a good foot in the door and thought that I could just sort of go to New York and with a couple of good connections get hooked up to a good agent and start doing auditions. But that's not what the universe had in store for me. And instead, I spent a year acting in productions. I was stage managing productions and definitely a part of the theater world for the entire year that this was my orientation. But I also went through just a nightmare of one bad experience after another of trying to play the agent game in New York. I don't know if you've done that.
Oh, yes. I haven't done it, but I have tons of friends who have. I never did.
It's awful because you can't really do anything without an agent.
Right.
And it's very hard to get an agent, or they make it seem like it is. And then there's this whole industry around getting young actors connected with agents. So you do agent workshops and you pay ridiculous amounts of money and you show up once a week and do monologues in front of agents that these people bring to you. And, you know, it's just the most depressing, awful way to get into the business. You're not doing what you wanted to be doing.
I used to tell my acting students that you had to have the ego strength of an aged rhinoceros to stay in this business.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. And it's just so discouraging when, you know, here you are working so hard just to get an agent. It's like, I don't even want an agent. I want a job.
Right.
You know? So at any rate, I spent a year doing that and then was called to another journey, another adventure in my life. At some point, I realized that I was feeling something very strongly and I didn't know what it was. And I thought, oh, I got to go see a psychic. I've got to figure out what's going on. There's something happening. I can feel it, but I don't know what it is. And one day I walked down to the subway and I thought, just listen for a second. You'll hear this. You can hear this. You don't need a psychic. Just listen. And I just said, okay, I'm willing to hear this. What is it? And it was a sentence. You have to leave New York. So I went, okay, where am I going? What am I doing? What's next? And I called an old friend of mine from college, and her father said, you know what? She's in Mexico, and she'll be there just for the next 18 hours, so call her at 5 o'clock tonight. Here's the number. And I actually, the day before, I had sat on the couch thinking, all right, I've got to leave New York. Where am I going? You know, once I finally heard this message, where am I going? And I closed my eyes and I spun my finger around on a map and I landed on Mexico. And I said, well, I'm not going to Mexico. Let's do that again. And I spun my finger around and it landed on Santa Fe. And I thought, all right, maybe I'll plan a trip to Santa Fe. I called my friend in Mexico that next night, and 10 days later I was there. And she was gone. She had moved on to an English or a Spanish language seminar in Guatemala that was going to go on for, you know, a month or so. And so I showed up in this place where nobody spoke any English and began working in a cultural institution as a volunteer, working with one of the most brilliant and amazing and challenging and complex women I've ever known, named Gertrude Duby Blom, who was an anthropologist. She was 91 years old when I was with her, and I spent a lot of time taking care of her and a lot of time ushering people through this sort of museum and guest house kind of scenario where we were all living. And it was one of the most magical and intense and life-changing times of my entire life. And I felt like I was sitting in the middle of a National Geographic magazine, you know, just like nothing I had ever experienced before. And it really sent me into a shamanic time period in my life, a real journey of the spirit that continued on through my 20s, actually through the pregnancy with my daughter.
So you were very young at this time.
I was, yes. This was 22 years old. I was 22 when I got to Mexico.
This is Sarah Robinson with Conscious Creating, and I'm talking with film producer Anna Dara, director of acquisitions of the Spiritual Cinema Circle.
You know, I got there in 10 days, meaning that I wrapped up my entire life, found the money, bought the tickets, went and got, you know, whatever shots I needed, all this kind of stuff in 10 days. And one of the things I had to do was go and sit with my mom and say, okay, look, I'm going to be gone for 6 months here. You know, I need help. Will you handle my bills? Will you handle these things? Will you help me with these things? You know, I'm going to go be a volunteer. And she said, okay, let's add up the money completely. Now, you have to realize, to get the point of the story, that my family's lucky number is 13. It always has been. It was my father's birthday. It was the day my parents got married. It was the day they signed on the house. It was, you know, it was everything important had always happened on a 13. All of our bank cards are 13-13, you know. We have 13-13s everywhere. And so, at any rate, I added up all this money, and she thought in her mind for a minute, and I know what she was thinking. She was thinking, all right, your father's paying for half of this. But okay, now divide it by two. And I divided it by two, and it was 13-13. And she just pulled out her checkbook, and she just wrote the check and said, with my greatest blessings, here you go.
Wow.
So, you know, the universe just ushered me through the process, getting me to Mexico, and then Mexico just changed my life. And to be honest with you, I was, you know, the way in which it changed my life had to do with giving up acting, had to do with giving up everything about ego, everything about what it was I thought I maybe should be doing, everything about aspirations and goals and ambitions and all of that was sort of like, this is not the time for this, and this is, you are not going to find fruit there. So let this go for now. And I kept hearing the words of somebody through my acting career who had said, if you can do anything else, do it, because this is just the hardest, most ridiculous, awful lifestyle you could ever choose.
Right.
So, you know, you've got a head on your shoulders. You've got a lot else you can do. Do something else. And that kind of came back to me during that time. And I just thought, you know what? It's not the be-all, end-all. And what I need to do is find fulfillment in my life instead of seeking it through this kind of ever-elusive acceptance.
Well, it sounds to me like you weren't even looking at theater when you went off to college. You were thinking maybe you'd be a visual artist.
Right.
Or so. It wasn't as if you came out of the womb knowing you wanted to be an actor.
No, that's true. That's very true. I actually was, you know, I was just always intrigued by the arts as a whole. You know, I've sung my whole life. I sang when I was little and was very into music for many years as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the whole big picture. And then at some point I realized that I could draw. And so I really started to rely on my abilities to draw and sculpt. And that's kind of where I was when I got to college, was, you know, here's something I can really do. And then in college, I had my first role in a play, and I won the Best Actor Award for that year as a freshman, which created a huge ruckus, and they actually ended the awards at that point because I was up against all these seniors, and always a senior had won before. So they were not happy that a freshman won, but what it did for me was it made me say, hey, this is something else I can really do, and I love this. And this is the culmination of everything. This is where I get to use all of my talents and all of my skills and all of my knowledge and wisdom is within this acting thing. So that's why it got me. That was where the bug bit me.
I can relate to a lot of what you say.
Mm.
And also relate to the decision to break away because it's no longer good for me and the kind of life I want to live.
Yeah.
And in some ways that, you know, we're a tribe as actors, and it feels like a betrayal or a failure or giving up, especially if one has had some measure of success.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I had to be true to myself and know what my life needed, and it was not to do 8 shows a week, even if it wasn't a Tony Award-winning theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I still struggle with that a little bit because I do love it. I'd really like to go on Sundays and do Shakespeare with you. That sounds fun. I need to do something like that here in Atlanta.
It is so much fun. It really is, and it's just very engaged and very awake, and it's 4 hours where you do nothing but stay on the word you're on so that you can grasp it. Because, you know, if you space out for a minute, it's gone. So it's really a form of meditation where you just sink into this 4 hours of whatever play you're reading and you just follow every word and stay really engaged for that time period. It's, you know, I leave every month just feeling like, thank God for this. This is such an enriching part of my world. And also just knowing that Robin's entire theory that Mary Sidney wrote the works of Shakespeare, I mean, I would do anything to support her in this. I just feel so strongly that she's absolutely dead on right and that we finally found the answer. And what we need now is for enough scholars and researchers to look into it that we'll find the actual proof that really, you know, without a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, proves that she was the author. So I'm waiting for that.
Maybe you need to do a doc on that.
Actually, I would really like to be involved in the feature.
Ah.
I would like to be involved in how the feature film plays out from this story, because Mary Sidney's life was extraordinary, and she was an incredible human being, regardless of if it's ever proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that she was the author. I mean, what she did is enough to have a feature film, you know, about her anyway. I tell you, when I saw Shakespeare in Love, I thought, oh, I was supposed to be a part of that. What, how did this happen? It was one of my, you know, favorite films of all time, and I couldn't imagine how it could have been made without me being involved at all.
I know that feeling.
But maybe it's
why?
Just a knowing.
Why wasn't I doing that?
Yeah, exactly.
So what led you ultimately to pursue this career in filmmaking?
Well, by the time I got to Santa Fe, which was a couple of years later, after Mexico, I was really, you know, out of that whole world of film and acting and, you know, the media. And what I did when I came here was I got very much into the arts, and I began working at a gallery and working in restoration, started my own business doing art restoration. And also, I just kind of started up one business after another, and I met the man that I was to marry and have a baby with, and he and I ended up having a coffee cart for a while with coffee and milkshakes, and we just had a really good time creating businesses and being entrepreneurial. And at some point, I was also working in a ceramic studio when I first got here, and 5 years later, I ended up having the opportunity to buy the ceramic studio with a friend of mine. And so we did that, and we owned this studio, and we ended up doing huge business plans and having 5 employees, and I ended up buying her out at some point so that it became, you know, completely my own business. And I just learned how to really run a business. I got a $25,000 loan from the state and, you know, all sorts of things that kind of made me feel like I understood a lot more about profit and loss and, you know, how to really run a company. And just as I was realizing that this was going to no longer be my life's work, that this was not working, and the reason it wasn't working is because the ceramics were so difficult to make that we could never make a good enough profit on them because they were hand-done and they were hand-designed, hand-made in every way, and there was no way to compete with China and Mexico within the market. So at some point I realized this is not going to happen. This is not ever going to really be a profitable business, and I'm going to need to get out of this. And at that moment, I was just surrounded by film all of a sudden. All of my these other parents at the school where my daughter goes to school, I started hanging out with other parents. They were all in the film industry, and they're very successful people, major directors, major writers. There was an actor, a brilliant actor, who started hanging out with me at the studio. These people just came to my ceramic studio and started kind of surrounding me there.
What is it about Santa Fe and New Mexico? There's just all these great creative people there.
It's true. I think it's about, you know, it takes some level of success to be able to say, thank you very much, and now I want to live where I want to live.
There you go.
And it's challenging because, I tell this kind of made-up story about, you know, you move to Santa Fe at 23 years old and you've been a dancer your whole life and you're looking for a job and you open up the paper and it says, dance teacher needed for 2 to 5 year olds, and you apply for this job and you think, of course I'm going to get this job. I'm a great teacher. I'm 20. You know, this is perfect. And you show up and the ex prima ballerina from the Russian ballet has just retired to Santa Fe and she's the person you're up against for the job.
That's a great, great, great story.
And so that's the kind of thing you deal with in Santa Fe. And it's magical as well because you get to know these amazing, brilliant people who are incredibly successful, very creative, and have come here to find a source of inspiration and a place of rest and renewal. And it's an amazingly magical place. It really is.
A little bit of a compromise from your brother's island, but...
Yes. Yes, we went our own ways.
I can relate to wanting to go to an island.
Yeah. Yeah, so we both have very sweet lives.
Yep. So then you ended up serving as events producer for the Screenwriters Conference in Santa Fe.
Actually, the way it all began was just as I was realizing that it was time for me to head into film, I ended up becoming involved with the Santa Fe Film Festival. I stepped in at a moment when they really needed some help creating their events and creating the event of the festival itself. They had had 1 year that it was fairly successful, but they were kicking off their second year and they needed somebody to organize the actual event. And so I stepped in and did that. And I continued to do that for the next 3 or 4 years. During that time, I also began working with the Screenwriting Conference and began doing their events. So yes, I ended up doing events for both organizations and got lots of experience and exposure to the film world through that, because, you know, I ended up bringing in all of the honorees and creating events around the honoring of them, you know, every year, and it's really fun.
This has become quite a prestigious film festival now.
Yes. Yeah, and it has grown and blossomed in new and different ways every single year, and it's really an amazing thing to be a part of still. So for the last, basically, September 2003, I met Stephen Simon at a workshop he did in Santa Fe, and it was interesting because I often do workshops and things like that in Santa Fe, and I never pay for anything, and I can always just sort of call the right person and show up because, you know, after being involved with the film festival and the Screenwriting Conference for 4 years, you sort of know everybody.
Sure.
And so when I heard he was coming to Santa Fe, what happened was a director who moved here, Janet Davidson, called me up and said, I hear you're the event queen, and I need some help because I'm going to throw a party for this man who's coming to town. Can you give me advice on how to do this? And I said, absolutely, if you invite me. And she said, sure. And I said, who is this guy and what's the story? And she told me about him and said, you know, he's this wonderful producer from Hollywood who left Hollywood because he was feeling disenfranchised and feeling like none of these films were what he really wanted to be. He really wanted to be a part of making movies that made a difference in people's lives. And after producing What Dreams May Come and Somewhere in Time, he had experienced what it was to make a film that made a difference in people's lives, and he didn't see any reason to do anything else anymore. And so he was now going around the country and talking to people about spirituality and film. And I said, well, boy, is this right up my alley. And what I did was I just called the Unity Church, and I handed them my credit card, and I said, sign me up, which I never did. And I was completely broke at the time because, you know, trying to piece together an existence on a struggling film festival, you know, in a screenwriting conference is pretty tough. So it was a hardship, but I knew I just had to be there. And because I paid my way in and because I showed up as a legitimate, you know, attendee, I sat right next to him, right in the front. I was willing to show up. I was willing to really be engaged. I brought a script that I had written, and, you know, I was there for the workshop. And during that time, he mentioned, he talked about Indigo, which was a film that they had just finished making. And basically what happened was I emailed him a week later and I said, you know, I really think you should bring Indigo to Santa Fe and you should premiere at the Santa Fe Film Festival. So we started talking about that. About a week later, he said, you know, I really think you should work for me. I think you are the person we have been waiting to find to look for these films. And let me tell you about this business we're starting.
Well, and now, on what did he base this? Had you had some conversations with him, or it just expressed your aesthetic about film? Or?
Yes. Well, we, you know, we had spent 2 days together, basically, in this workshop. So he had gotten to see my work. He understood my comments in a group setting, my feedback to people in the group setting. That night there was a party, and we talked quite a bit at the party, and it was more just sort of, I think what happened was he saw in me someone who completely understood the idea of spirituality coming through film, where the only way that's going to be truly effective is if it's a really entertaining piece of film. So the idea is, he saw in me someone who understood what entertainment and spirituality means and how it comes through film together. And he was right. I mean, he and I are completely simpatico on this, and we have always understood each other's feeling for spirituality and entertainment. And what I say to people all the time is, you know, first and foremost, I'm looking for entertainment. Even in a documentary, if it's not an entertaining story, if it doesn't tell us something and take us somewhere, and if it doesn't entertain us in that process, then it's not going to be right for the spiritual cinema circle. It might be very right for another medium, but not for this one.
So you immediately became the director of acquisitions?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, he and Gay Hendricks and Kathleen Hendricks, Gay's wife, had created the concept behind the company. They had a group of people, including Arielle Ford, who's a wonderful publicist, and Cynthia Littman, who's our lawyer, who we were all having these sort of conference calls in the creative aspects of how to bring about this company. And they brought me in to say, you know, can you find these films? Do you think there's enough films out there? Do you think they exist? And my answer was, probably not, guys. I mean, you know, at the time especially, it was like, I don't see this many films. You know, I don't see films that are uplifting and enlightening and inspiring.
This was 2004.
2003. Yeah, it was like, you know, there aren't many. I mean, yes, they're out there, and I believe I could probably find them, but they're tough to find. And five a month? Wow, that's a hard call, you know? So the beginning was really praying for material on a daily basis. It was kind of, you know, this monthly process of, please, God, let this come through on time. Please, please, please. And I spent a lot of time praying for miracles in the beginning, especially because we were paying nothing. paying nothing. We had no members. We had this great concept, and it was kind of like I just had to get the filmmakers to believe in the concept enough that they wanted to support it and say, all right, here's my film, go ahead.
This is Sarah Robinson with Conscious Creating, and I'm talking with film producer Anna Dara, director of acquisitions of the Spiritual Cinema Circle. Well, I have to tell you, before I set up this interview, or before I asked to set up this interview, I really hadn't heard about the Spiritual Cinema Circle. But I was talking with my across-the-street neighbor and told her I would be interviewing you. And she just freaked out and said, oh, my gosh, this Spiritual Cinema Circle has changed my life.
Oh.
Here. And she just handed dozens of movies over to me and said, watch them all. she was
wonderful.
So enthusiastic, and apparently it's huge now.
Yeah, it's doing very well. It's really doing very well. It's very exciting. It's funny. I got to go to the Cannes Film Festival this year in France, and it was my first time to Europe since I was, you know, 19, and I was very, very excited to go. And I'm walking around Cannes at the end of the week feeling like, this is just so overwhelming, and, you know, feeling like the tiniest little bug sort of walking on the sidewalk. And I walked down this aisle, and I thought, turn right, just go right. I just kind of heard a voice, and I went right, and I went down to the end of the aisle, and I found a film that had been filmed in Santa Fe, and there was a guy standing there. And I said, oh, this is interesting. I remember when this was filmed in Santa Fe. I'm from Santa Fe. And he said, really, what do you do? And I told him, and he said, you're Anna Dara? I'm a member of the circle.
Oh, my goodness. Synchronicity.
Oh, that is so sweet. I mean, it's just so wonderful no matter where you go, because we're worldwide, too. So it's just a really wonderful thing to be a part of, and to feel it growing and to feel the support of the members is just so incredible for us.
Well, I watched a number of the films in preparation for talking with you today, and one of the things that struck me was their diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really sort of ran the gamut, and you'd have this film like Selamy, a moving story about a young girl's creative struggle to overcome the grief over the loss of her mom, and then that was paired in the same month, and it is monthly, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the same month with a film like Disenchanted, which is a comedy with, you know, this magical psychiatrist played by John Belushi and a group of women portraying fairy tale characters.
Mm-hmm.
And what were they advising? I think they were advising a divorced mother on how to cope with her new circumstances.
Exactly. It's actually Jim Belushi, although John's probably
listening. Jim. I'm so sorry.
He approves. No, that's okay.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, it was magical enough that it could have been a John Belushi role.
Anyway, it was hysterical.
Yes.
And is there a purpose in this type of grouping of films?
You know, it's funny. We recently had a company retreat, and we were each sort of given an opportunity to talk to the rest of the group. There's about 12 of us, you know, that come together when we have a retreat. And we were each given an opportunity to talk to the group about what we are doing and the way in which we want the company to be involved and moved by what we are doing. And so what I did with the group was I said, let's take a look at the themes of each month that we've gone through, because this is a journey. We are taking our entire membership on a monthly journey. Let's take a look at where we've gone and what we've taken people through. And so what we did was we sat back and we looked at each month. We looked at about 6 months of film. And we went through each month and we said, okay, out of these four films, is there one theme that comes through? Is there one message? Is there one point?
Hmm.
And it was incredible what came through each month and how we each related to those lessons and learning spiritually. Some of them were like, show up. You know, just show up and allow what's supposed to take place to take place. And learning how to show up in your life. And, you know, some of them were about surrender. You know, just give it up. Stop trying so hard. Just surrender to what is and let this come. And, you know, those kinds of lessons. Some of them were about grief and letting go. Some of them were about finding inspiration through the arts, recognizing the importance of our own involvement in the world around us in order to keep us engaged, you know, or whatever it was that the mm-hmm. theme was in a given month. And it was such a beautiful exercise with the whole company for us each to realize really what we're bringing to the world here. Because my feeling is 20,000 people a month is enough to shift the consciousness, you know, if we're all going through a kind of a spiritual journey together.
Right. And, you know, then they'll tell friends, and people will hear about it on radio stations and television stations and
mm-hmm.
think, what the heck is this? And what I'd like to say is I'm not really, I wouldn't consider myself a New Ager. I'm an Episcopalian, but an Episcopo-Buddhist might be more precise.
Right.
And so I feel like I'm fairly traditional in that regard, and yet I found these films totally enjoyable
mm-hmm.
and really broadened my horizon. I watched a film called Indigo Evolution
mm-hmm.
about children who are highly gifted and come into this world in a way that's very connected. They're highly sensitive. And it just made me look at my perspective and the way I treat my children differently.
Yeah.
Am I being compassionate enough? Am I being patient enough? Am I allowing them to evolve in their own way so that they can do the things here on the planet that they need to do? So I would highly recommend this program, and I may look at my Visa card and see if I can't join too.
That's
sort
great.
Of bad right now, but I really like it.
That's great. Well, and there's a free trial going on right now, so you can actually join and get your first month free and just pay shipping and handling. So it's a nice way to get introduced to it all.
And how can the listeners join the circle?
They can join by just getting on the website, which is www.spiritualcinemacircle.com, and that's it. there's a link at the very top that says free trial. Click here. You can get yourself signed up.
Well, I need to do that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. And the thing is, because we care most about, you know, because one of our highest criteria is entertainment, these are films that are fun to watch. It's not like taking medicine.
No, they are fun.
Yeah. And I think over time what we're doing is we're making people realize, you know what, I shouldn't talk about other people. I am realizing that on a Friday night, I would much rather watch an entertaining film that's going to give me something positive for my soul than an entertaining film that's going to have me feeling destroyed on some level, that's going to have me going to sleep feeling afraid or anxious or more nervous in life. You know, I mean, at this point, what do you need, you know, to feel more peace in the world? I think media is a huge part of what we allow into our brains and our hearts and our souls. And I've just begun to realize that it's not about taking medicine, that it's truly about choosing something that suits me and serves me better. So
I read your review of the short film James's Journey to Jerusalem, and you wrote, James's journey through this film is complicated and quickly becomes a metaphor for all our journeys in life, trying to navigate between getting what we want physically and the desire for the monetary and societal rewards heaped upon us, those of us who excel in this life, and the desire to totally and completely surrender ourselves to being led by a higher source. It's a moving statement. Clearly, you do feel you've been led to your work by a higher source.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people who have known me for many years, when I first got this job, I mean, we still marvel. We still say, 5 years ago, if you had sat down and written every possible descriptive word for exactly what you would want to do if you were, like, you know, had the best job in heaven, what would it be, you know?
Right.
And this still blows that out of the water. I mean, this is the most incredible job I ever could have crafted or created, blending all of my favorite things and my talents and my interests and my abilities. And I'm so thankful and feel so privileged to be a part of it all. And I still get to be involved with film as well, and I still get to do reviews like this, and I produce films as well, and finishing up the third documentary that I've produced in Santa Fe.
What is that?
The film that's just being finished right now is called Cinderellas of Santa Fe, and it's directed by Vanessa Vassar, who's a friend of mine who we've been working together for 5 years now, and this is the third film we've worked on together, and she's just a really terrific, very natural director, and she chose to focus on documentaries up to this point, and she chose local subjects, so she pretty much focuses on a story that's here that's close to her heart, but that resonates worldwide, because it's really human condition that she's exploring. And Cinderellas of Santa Fe is about the idea that there's kind of a Cinderella syndrome going on, where we found a bunch that we just have keep meeting these women who are brilliantly talented, beautifully successful in their lives. I think you're going to relate to this. And yet they find themselves doing menial labor jobs. They're cleaning houses, or they're managing restaurants, or they're cleaning tables.
Don't
forget the toilets. In order to make a living, because they aren't getting paid what they should be getting paid. They aren't getting the monetary reward that matches their real success with the things that they really want to be doing. And they're not going to give them up either. So they would rather take a menial job in order to continue their lifestyle, where they get to keep being artists and dancers and singers and performers and whatever it is that they're doing, than give that up and become, you know, a more career-oriented job that would pay them enough. You know, they're not willing to give up their passion and their calling for money, basically. But they're struggling. And it's a really tough kind of a syndrome. It's sort of like, so when do I meet my prince? When does the fairy godmother come and, and grant me my wish? You know?
I'm waiting.
Exactly. And when does this get easy? And when does the path open? And when do I get to be truly supported doing this thing that I love to do and that I'm good at doing?
Yeah, it really is tough. And I'm married to a businessman who runs a a company and is very much a bottom line person in that regard, as I'm sure you were when you read, you know, when you ran your company. And he just doesn't understand how artists can do what we do and receive so little compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fully prepared for his Social Security to to support the artist, you know, when they're not going to be able to support themselves one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad, you know, that we have that yin and yang in our family.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult, and I'm glad you're doing that film. I can't wait to see it. And you've produced two others that were award winners.
Yeah, there's a film called American Waitress New Mexico, which is a full-length documentary. And it played on the Sundance Channel for a couple of years, and actually we're finishing a deal right now so that it will be on available on Netflix through the Sundance Channel's, you know, group of films that they make available on Netflix. So it will be rentable very soon, and it's just a beautiful little film about waitresses, about waitressing, but it's not. It's about who we are, you know, as women, and the life journeys and what everybody's doing while they wait tables, you know. And the next time you sit down at a restaurant, you will definitely think differently about the person who comes to take your order.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. You know, I feel connected to you on a number of levels, but especially by the fact that you're a mother working in a highly demanding and competitive field. And I like to ask the question, how do you balance these roles?
Yeah, it's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
I have a funny scenario where Serendipity is my daughter, Saren for short.
Mm.
Her father, Lauren, is my ex-husband. But I rarely use that term. He is my very, very good friend, and is still very much a companion in life for me in many ways. And we still get to spend a lot of time together, and we, in some ways, we raise Saren together, because we'll still do dinner together, all of us, and we'll still go see movies or, you know, hang out and play games at times, that kind of thing. So we really get to share our lives, and instead of being a divorced family where you're either with your father or your mother, we kind of have a much larger gray area of family time. It's also nice because, and you know, I find married couples who are so thankful that they're married and that their marriages are intact, feeling jealous about this aspect, which is, I have a week on and a week off.
Oh, yes, my best friend just got divorced. I know about that.
Yeah, and so she spends a week with me, and then she spends a week with her father. And that is often tangled up and all over the place, and it'll be 2 days here and 2 days there sometimes, just because one of us is out of town or one of us is working really hard on something, or, you know, we do help each other all the time, so it's not such a set schedule. But basically, I can work 16, 18-hour days when she's with her father. And then when she's with me, I say, all right, you know, I go pick her up, and I take her with me. And because I have such a fun job, she loves being a part of it. And she there's one part of my office which she calls her office, and she comes in and watches movies all the time. And one of the things that the Spiritual Cinema Circle does is we have a group of films that we put out under the name the Kids Cinema Circle. And we have one DVD right now that's available of Kids Cinema Circle films. And we are working on compiling the next one. So one of Saren's jobs is to run by all the films that we are considering for the Kids Cinema Circle, and she takes that very seriously and loves being a part of it. And so she gets to share in my job as well, you know, just one more way in which I'm incredibly lucky.
Anna Dara, thank you for joining me on Conscious Creating.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. It's been great to talk to you.
It's been great talking to you. To learn more about Anna and her work, visit her website at spiritualcinemacircle.com. Thank you for joining us on Conscious Creating. We invite you to visit our website at consciouscreating.net to give us your feedback, and visit our store where you'll find books, CDs, and DVDs by our guests. Music for today's show is from Chakra Suite by Stephen Halpern and is used here with permission. Sound engineering is provided by Billy Fallon with Out of Sync Productions. This is Sarah Robinson, host and executive producer, wishing you a fruitful week of conscious creating.